Hi, and welcome back to our last in the series on pediatric seizures. We have covered what seizures look like, to prioritize the ABCs, and then stop the seizure. I hope you got to watch number 4 in the series, which was a video on why you should pick the nose. Today, we're going to run through key history, physical examination, and documentation practices. Yay, more documenting! I'm Julia Magana, a pediatric emergency medicine physician at UC Davis, and I'm here with Manish Shah, a pediatric emergency medicine physician at Texas Children's Hospital Emergency Centers. Manish, tell us again, what is the ideal care, the ideal protocol of the seizing child?
Intramuscular and intranasal should be the first route that should be given, and that checking glucose really should be a deferred priority after getting that first dose of medication in, and that time should not be spent trying to place an IV, that most of these patients don't require further airway management. Really, oxygen and a jaw thrust or chin lift is usually sufficient for the majority of these patients. And I think that if EMS agencies can implement solutions to try to eliminate the math that's required to help facilitate getting the right dose on board, then I think that those are the highest priorities.
What are some barriers to achieving this best case scenario that we've laid out?
Yeah, it's interesting. We did a study where we interviewed paramedics in 3 different EMS systems to identify why they manage pediatric seizure patients the way they do. And we actually identified a few barriers from their perspective. One of them is just the availability of equipment. We found that sometimes they don't have the mucosal atomizer device to give the intranasal medication. Sometimes they don't have needles that are small enough to give an intramuscular injection to a small child. Sometimes there's ambiguity in their protocol about whether they're supposed to treat a focal seizure different than a generalized seizure, or they're supposed to treat a febrile seizure different than an afebrile seizure. And so, in that situation, I think that just clarifying the protocol and being clear that all seizures, when it comes to EMS, should be treated the same, whether you have a fever or not, whether it's focal or it's generalized, when it comes to EMS, all seizures should be treated the same. And I think the main barrier that I see is getting the medication and getting it at the right dose. So we found that approximately a third of these patients aren't getting any medication when they're actively seizing. It's a little bit unclear why that's happening. Sometimes that happens because maybe EMS is drawing up the medicine and then the seizure stops while they're drawing it up. But I think in other cases, sometimes it's just not given, maybe because the seizure wasn't recognized, or because other priorities were there, and so they weren't able to give it in the short transport that they had. But even when they do get the medicine, a barrier that we notice is that half of them are getting the wrong dose. And in most of those situations, over 70% of the time, it's an underdose. And so when we explored that with the paramedics, we found that one of the barriers in terms of giving the right dose is just the need to have to do math in the midst of trying to deal with a stressful situation on scene, assessing this patient. They don't normally see children. They see them 10% of the time, and so that heightens anxiety. And then to have to calculate a dose where you have to do math in the midst of all that can be really challenging, we found from the paramedics' perspective. And so I think these are some of the barriers they experience: availability of equipment, ambiguity of their protocol, and then the cognitive load of having to do math to calculate a dose.
Another thing is not recognizing that a child is still seizing or was having a seizure in the first place. And my goodness, I recognize that that's challenging because I struggle with it as well. What are the key history questions that after everything's stabilized and maybe even as you're driving in that the medic should ask the family?
Deferring the history until after you've treated the seizure is key, but once you've treated the seizure and it seems like it's stopped, then it is important to get a good history. And so I think important things to ask are if the child has a history of seizures, and if so, how frequently they seize, what do they normally look like? If they take any medications, especially if they have a seizure disorder, what medications do they take for those seizures, and has there been any recent dose adjustments to those medications? I think another important question is, have they been sick recently? So in the child that has a known seizure disorder, any sort of concurrent illness can make them more likely to have a seizure. And also, in the child who doesn't have a seizure disorder, if they have been sick recently and they're in that 6 month to 6 year age range, then this might be a febrile seizure that's happening. And a lot of times I've noticed in speaking with parents that they didn't notice a fever at home, and the fever started during the seizure when EMS was called, and it's EMS that identified that the child was febrile. And so asking those questions about preceding signs of illness can be a clue to identify a risk for them having a seizure, either a febrile seizure or for having a breakthrough seizure in the child who has epilepsy. I think other important questions are, how have they been eating today? So if they skipped some meals, they could be hypoglycemic. And then also asking about any other injuries recently, since, like I mentioned earlier, trauma could be a cause of the seizure if they have an intracranial bleed.
Yeah, those are all really good points. And, you know, we're asking so much of our medics when they come in to have gotten a full history and placed an IV and stopped a seizure and protected the airway that I always remind my residents to be kind and understanding and ask them, how much have you done in the first 15 minutes of
Absolutely.
Them in the emergency department?
There's a lot to juggle, and that's why I emphasize that the high priorities are making sure airway breathing circulation are intact after you've determined that the scene's safe, and then stopping the seizure. But if you do have the time after all that's done, then yeah, go ahead and get a history and do a more thorough exam.
Kind of the key points that I'm looking for when a medic comes in is how long the seizure was going on for, because it kind of gives me a picture of where we are in the process, and also for prognosis long term. So how long is important? Is there a history of seizures? And also, is there a history of hypoglycemia or diabetes that might cause the seizure? Do I need to be more attentive to the blood sugar? The kind of concurrent symptoms, what did the child look like? Was there cyanosis? Was there vomiting, bowel and bladder incontinence?
Yeah, I think the main things that I want to know on the receiving end of getting these patients in the emergency department are the things that sometimes the parents were too stressed to notice.
And also, Manish, I would add to that, did the caregivers or the bystanders give any medication to stop the seizure as well? Because that figures into my process and also what I expect to happen when I give more benzos, right?
Absolutely.
But the good news is for our medics is that they don't have to find the exact cause of the seizures. They just have to identify a seizure and treat a seizure. And even in the pediatric emergency department, after we've done all of our workup, a lot of times we don't find a cause for the seizures anyways. What about key exam pieces?
Some of the most important things are checking the pupils, because if you see asymmetric pupils, then that's a sign of increased intracranial pressure, which could either be due to an injury or it could be due to some other illness going on that is causing increased intracranial pressure that might have made that child seize. Whether or not they have a gag reflex, what's their muscle tone in each extremity? Sometimes you can have focal seizures. So was it symmetric in terms of their tone, or what were there differences from one extremity to the other? And then also, were there other obvious signs of injury?
Yeah. And this is all to say we do that neurological status examination after we've done the airway breathing circulation, make sure the airway is patent, there's no respiratory distress, and that there's effective ventilation, and of course, signs of perfusion like checking pulses, cap refill, color, those types of things. What are some important documentation pieces? What do we need to document after it's done?
So I think that some of the important features that we talked about earlier are important, like what the seizure looked like, how long it lasted, whether it stopped on its own or after an intervention. And then also, if a glucose was checked, what was the measurement? And then obviously, what the vital signs were, and then what was the context of the seizure? What were the preceding symptoms and other concurrent symptoms and findings in the midst of the seizure?
Yeah, I think especially if they're actively seizing during transport time, the onset and cessation time is important. And what were some of the concurrent symptoms during that time? Was there apnea, cyanosis, vomiting, all of those things that we talked about, fever, like you mentioned. And then also documenting the medications, the amounts and the routes given by bystanders and by the pre-hospital providers is important. And then that examination of the neurological status.
Yes.
Okay, I recognize that that is a lot to cover during a hopefully short ride to the hospital. Remember, when you do arrive, to ask for some real-time feedback on these scenarios. If you have the space, stay and watch how the ED team approaches the seizing child. We can all learn together. Manish and I are part of the EMS for Children's Innovation and Improvement Center and PCARN's Prime and Champ nodes. We all want to get the latest research and best practice into the hands of those taking care of kiddos, you. Ped seizures can be a stressful event for everyone, but I hope the things we discussed over this series gives you a little more confidence to approach these hot potatoes. Thanks for learning with us and taking care of kiddos.